I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 68 of season 6 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John Parker of the Batminute. Welcome back to the show, Batman.
Thank you for having me, darling. It's a delight to be here.
And it's a delight to have you here. So minute 68 begins with Jane saying both hello and goodbye, and ends with George still being pretty clueless.
Like so, he is for a lot of the movie.
Yeah, basically. So we ended things yesterday with the Wainwrights basically deciding that they're leaving and getting ready to go for their 20-plus hour drive down to Florida.
Good luck.
Yeah, I guess so. And, I mean, this minute ends with everyone basically just saying hello and goodbye, which is just really funny. You know, because...
I hadn't thought of it that way. I suppose it's one of those, you don't notice that until you split it into minutes.
That's right, because basically, you know, we hear Jane say, awfully happy to have met you, Mary. Nice meeting you, too. Goodbye. Glad to see you. Goodbye, George. So long, George. See you in the funny papers. So long, Mary. Bye, Sam. Have fun. Thanks for dropping around. Florida. Hee-haw. Hee-haw.
I've always been fascinated by that phrase, see you in the funny papers. Like, I always, as a kid as well, I was just like obsessed with it whenever they said it in a film or anything. The funny papers. Because by the time I was a kid, a newspaper might have one or at most two little comics in it, but they were never that outlandish or that interesting. So you didn't really pay attention. It's like, oh, this is a newspaper. That's for your parents, you know. So imagine a time when these things were seen as like important, where it's like, well, you know, they're important enough to make a gag about. Oh, yeah, you know, the funny pages, you know. Everyone knows that. There's a whole section in the newspaper just for that.
That's right. I mean, I remember growing up in the 80s, there was an entire section on the Sunday paper, you know, with a whole bunch of comic strips and things like that. You know, some of the most famous ones, you know, Hagar the Horrible and Beetle Bailey and Blondie, Garfield, you know, all those things back then. Do you know how far back it goes, the idea of having comic strips in newspapers?
I'm going to predict, I don't know the answer, but I'm going to predict it's basically from the beginning.
From the beginning of what? From the beginning of time?
Papers being like a big deal. Let's say the mass industry of newspapers. I'm sure when it was little local papers, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You're on the right track with that. So it started in the late 19th century, not long after they invented the color press.
There you go.
Okay, one of the first comic strips was one called The Little Bears, which had sequential art and recurring characters, and it was in William Randolph Hearst's San Francisco Examiner.
Okay, and then I think that's the kind of thing you reboot, right? People always reboot something from the 80s. No, bring this back, make a movie out of this.
That's right. And then it became even more popular because there was a newspaper war between William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer.
Mm.
So then they had the whole idea of, okay, having color strips on, you know, either Sunday or Saturday to fight back, you know, between the two of them and stuff like that. I mean, you're a Batman person. Are you also a Batman comic strip, comic book fan, or just the movies?
I started out doing the show. The gimmick was basically Niall is the Batman freak who knows everything. And I am coming at it from the angle of I'm obsessed with the Batman movies. But through doing the show, I've then obviously explored lots of other things. So I do have a giant stack of comics next to me right now, which I'm trying to get rid of because I've got too many. So I've bought loads over the last, oh God, what is it now, 6 years? But they're hit and miss for me. I don't know. I have to be in the mood for a comic. I think I prefer it when it's a full graphic novel.
Because it's like a movie where it has a beginning and an end. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's a whole thing, and yeah. Whereas comics, they just, I like them, but they just go on and on and on, and and there's arcs, obviously, but I don't know. It just feels like you're locked in. It's like a marriage, you know.
Okay, that's an interesting way to refer to comic books, but okay.
Well, it's hard to get out of it as well because I initially just subscribed to Batman. I was like, okay, I'll get Batman. Then I subscribed to Detective Comics because obviously it's basically Batman 2 most of the time. So you're like, okay, cool, got me 2 Batman. But then you get addicted. You start buying more. You add more to your subscription, more. I was getting Batman, Detective Comics. I was getting Spider-Man. What else was it? Squirrel Girl. Goddamn, X-Men. I had so many. Oh, I had Aliens. They had one coming out. I had Star Wars. I was having so many turn up. For a year, I didn't read them because I was reading the previous years. When I decided, look, this is, I'm just going to stop them all. There's no point. So I cancelled everything. I finally just took the plunge. Like, no, stop it. I'll just buy the ones I want to buy when they're out in like a graphic novel format, you know.
Interesting. I mean, I became a comic book fan in high school, and because I'm a completionist, so I, you know, got into, you know, a bunch of different comic books, and then yeah. I went back and I, you know, bought the previous ones, to have the full collection, and you know, over a course of like 3 or 4 years, I amassed a humongous collection. I mean, I was mostly DC, had a few Marvel stuff in there. And I ended up having thousands of comics. And then when I moved from the States to Israel, so I didn't bring them with me, they were all sitting there. And after a few years, my parents said to me, they said, we're not storing this for you anymore. What are you going to do with it? So I then went and had to sell them. I basically sold them all back to the same store that I had bought them from. And obviously the store made a huge profit on it because, you know, even if I spent a dollar on each, you know, then whatever they sold it back to me for, I remember I bought, you know, I basically traded it for something. I can't remember at this point what I traded it up for. But, you know, they basically said, okay, we'll give you X amount of credit, you know, and then, so I went and bought something with it. Again, I don't remember what it was that I bought. It's one of those regrets that I sort of have. Because at the time, I mean, you say you don't have time to read them. At the time, I read everyone that I had. You know, for me, it was because, again, it goes back to my my flaw of wanting to always be a completionist. You know, so I, you know, went and got all of them, and then I just sat down and read them start to finish. So it's sort of like a, you know, a graphic novel type of thing, even though I was sometimes reading 70 comics, you know, in a series. But the idea was, okay, here's the story arc going from start to finish. You know,
that's my exact problem, right? I'm also a completionist. So not having, like, once I started falling behind, it was stressing me out.
Yes.
I'm very familiar. I need to keep up. Yeah.
Very, very familiar.
I've reviewed over
10,800 movies on my website because that's the way I am, and that's why I do movies by minute podcasts, because, you know, I like being a completionist and going through every episode 1 minute at a time, you know, that type of thing.
Well, it's the same when I'm watching movies. Like, if I watch Star Wars, you know, I'll watch the original trilogy, of course I will. I will then watch the prequels, even though I don't really like them, because, like, well, I've got to.
I know the feeling. I definitely know the feeling. I've done that very often. I mean, this past week, I for some reason had the urge to want to revisit Gremlins 2. Okay, which I never really liked. Gremlins 2. It's a fun movie, but it's not that great. You know, And then when I was getting ready to watch it, I said, wait a second. If I'm going to watch this, I probably should watch the first one again right before it. So that's
absolutely
what I did.
You can't watch two without watching one. No.
Exactly. So that's what I did. You know, for better, for 1,000%. Yes.
I do it all the time. I remember my ex saying to me, why are you watching Attack of the Clones? You don't like this one. I was like, yeah, I know I don't like it. That's not the point. I've got to. Don't you understand? I've got to watch it.
That's right. I'm not going to be able to fall asleep at night if I don't watch it.
No, it would stress me out more.
I actually like Attack of the Clones, but we're not here to argue with Mr. Star Wars. I mean, my favorite of the prequels is Revenge of the Sith. I'm always amazed when I watch it.
I like Sith. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm always upset about the fact that they cut out 40 minutes of the first scene. Yeah, because I'd love to see it.
Like the actual battle and everything.
The actual battle, the kidnapping of Palpatine.
Yeah.
You know, there's apparently a duel that happens that's related. What's her name? Akasha? I don't remember.
Oh, Ahsoka. Yeah.
Ahsoka, right. So she's in there. There's like a whole bunch of different things that apparently happened. They ended up cutting out like 40 minutes of that whole sequence.
I'll tell you what I do, even though I'm a completionist, what I do like about Star Wars, this is very off topic, I don't care, I do like, though, that they take that approach from serials. They just drop you in the middle of something, don't they?
That's right.
So in a That's way, great. Cutting it out, although it's like, oh, all that stuff sounds great, I also like that it's like, no, oh, by the way, in this episode of Star Wars, yeah, Palpatine's been kidnapped. Yeah, just get on with it. Go.
I agree with you 100%. You know, but you know, there is a part of me that still wants to see it. It's like, you know, my second season I did Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and they cut out 2 hours and 11 minutes of the original cut of the movie.
Okay, I knew they cut it a lot, but I didn't know it was that much.
Yes. Okay. So I mean, the running joke that I had during that season was the fact that they basically cut out Die Hard because that's as long as Die Hard is.
Oh, that's wild.
Yes. And I have the script, and I went through the script, and every episode talked about what was cut from the script. Most of what was in the script, I'm glad they cut out, but I still would love to watch it at least once, you know, to see the whole thing. But, you know, apparently that's impossible. You know, it's gone. It's one of those things that's lost.
Yeah, that was back in the day. They didn't really keep hold of that stuff, because why would they?
That's right. Apparently, they say John Hughes had a copy of it somewhere, and once he died, no one knew where it went. You know, again, it would be amazing to see. But I mean, that the movie itself, when it's only 96 minutes, is amazing. You know,
but it might be even better.
But
who knows?
But you know, so yeah. So back to what we're talking about here. You know, the whole conversation between Sam and Jane and George and Mary is a little strange, you know, just because of the way that they show us the differences between these characters' lifestyles.
Mm.
You know, and I mean, back to what you were saying about the funny papers, I think of that line where he says, "See you in the funny papers." I think he might be referring to the fact that maybe, you know, there are going to be political cartoons written about one of the two of them. Maybe that's his what he's referring to here.
Oh, okay. I didn't think of that. I just thought maybe, it was like...
Maybe yeah, he's yeah. saying that I'm so successful that people are now going to be talking about me in, you know, in political cartoons.
Oh, see, even if he doesn't mean it that way, I think George would interpret it that way.
That's right.
Because he's feeling a bit sensitive at the moment, you know.
That's right. He's basically saying to George, you know, I'm the person that people are going to remember and people are going to talk about.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I just thought he was just being silly, you know, being a bit goofy, like, you know. But no, I think you might have hit the nail on the head. That's intriguing. That adds an extra layer.
Yes, I think it does. And then as the car drives off, you know, we see George and Mary standing there watching for quite a long time, as it's a few seconds, but it's longer than what we would expect, as they watch Sam drive off in his chauffeured car. You know, and then the two of them turn around, and they start walking back towards their car, and you see on George's face that you know, he feels that he missed out on something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That he sees the difference in their lifestyles, and then he like kicks the door of his car. Meaning, you know, this is a piece of crap, you know, that type of thing.
It is quite interesting that clearly we are supposed to see his car and think that is like junk.
That's right.
It's you know, that's the implication. But again, to me, in 2023, as of recording, I think that looks really cool.
Yeah.
That's a really nice car. Look at the design, the class, the style. I love that back in those days, people put so much effort into making something look and feel worth your money, worthwhile. You know?
Well, I'm assuming that George got a good deal on it, you know.
Yeah. But the movie wants us to think like look at what he's got, kind of. It is it's obviously cheaper, you know. And he hasn't got a chauffeur.
That's right. That's a good point. And I mean the scene just changes from there, and you know, we're back in Potter's office. We somehow were transported back to Potter's office. Actually, you know what? I want to go back 1 second. If you look around as they're walking towards their car, you see all of these new houses in the background. You know, and it looks as if this is a well-developed area.
Yeah.
You know, there are numerous houses. I mean, you can see, I think, about 7 houses as they're walking by, you know, and as successful as they may feel that they've actually accomplished this, you know, George just doesn't feel successful because he's comparing himself to Wainwright.
And I don't think he ever regrets what he's done, but it's still frustrating to him.
Yes.
You know, I think ultimately he feels good about it. He is helping all these people in his community, but he's like, I could have had more. You
That's
know?
Right.
And I could have done more, as you say.
That's right. And then we get another screen swipe, and we're back with our good friend Mr. Potter, and we see that he has this very interesting lighter in his hand,
yeah.
Which looks like a little like ball that he's lighting a cigar, and we see that it's George that's puffing on this cigar.
Well, that lighter ties in weirdly to what I was saying about cars. Look at the care and design that's gone into that lighter. And imagine buying a lighter now. Not that anyone smokes anymore over here. Everyone vapes. But mm-hmm. If you needed a lighter, you just get some cheap plastic. Look at that. That's amazing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Everything was cool. I'd also, imagine a meeting in this day and age with cigars. That's not happening.
That's right.
That is wild.
Yes. And if you look around his office, it's very interesting. Some of the decorations are, first of all, he had a picture of himself.
Yeah. Where he can see it as well. Not just people coming in. He can look at himself.
That's right. Which says a lot about him. He has this very strange contraption on the desk, which has a bell on it, which I'm assuming is some way for him to actually, does that look like it's holding different types of booze?
I couldn't figure it out, you know. There's definitely – they look like – what do you call them? Like decanters, you know, where you for some reason you'd pour your booze into a crystal thing.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's maybe those, but then what's the bell? And then
yeah,
there's bits next to the bell. Are they for candles? There's some – I don't know.
Well, actually, maybe this is something that is brought in – you know, maybe the secretary brought this in before the meeting so that you have it here – you know, so that during the meeting, if they want to have a drink, it's right there next to them.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't recall seeing that in, you know, in the beginning of this week when we had the, you know, the rent collector there.
Oh, wait, I've got an idea. Oh, no, hang on. I was going to say maybe it's multi-purpose. Maybe it's a box to keep the cigars in. But actually, I think that might be what's on the right of the screen there. What do you call them? It's like a – I don't smoke. I don't know what they call them.
There's
like
a special cigar box cases.
Them in. It's like a is it a humidor or is that the room? I don't know. Smokers, let us know.
Yeah. Actually, when looking back at the scenes with the rent collector, it actually does look as if they have this here.
Oh, okay.
You know, that it was there the whole time, which is a little strange. You know, it's not something...
I also thought that the smoking, again, maybe it is me putting my modern sensibilities on it, but I saw it as it's part of showing off, you know, how rich he is again.
Maybe. So, yes, it is there. We can see it in yesterday's minute. At the very beginning of yesterday's minute, we see this contraption is there also. So this isn't something that they're trying to hide from us. You know, it's not something that's brand new.
Yeah.
Just for this meeting with George. Oh, well. There goes that theory. Well,
I definitely thought it was like a like a rich show-off thing, though. Because, like, at least, again, it could be modern. Cigars aren't cheap, even at the best of times. Even a cheap one isn't cheap, you know? So the fact that he can just give one away in this meet, like, there you go, to his rival as well, someone he doesn't even like.
You have to take that into context here, because you know when we get into the dialogue in a second, you'll see also it's very strange with the way that because George starts off by saying, "Thank you, sir. That's quite a cigar, Mr. Potter." He goes, "Oh, yeah, like it? I'll send you a box." Mm. So you see, it doesn't matter how much it costs. Potter exactly. Wants to butter him up. You know, Potter's goal here. That's right. Potter's goal is to make sure that he's going to get. You know, he wants to get George on his side. That's his plan right now.
There's a subtlety there where he's like, I also want George to know he can't beat me. I'm incredibly wealthy. Like, you're not going to topple me.
Right. And then George sits down in a nice way. That's right. And then George sits down in the chair. And this is always cracked me up, this scene. You know, he's very, very low in the chair.
Well, that's another power move thing.
That is correct. It's definitely
the
psychology.
Most power move of all.
That's right. You know, not only did they do that in you know, special effects in Lord of the Rings, they do that here too. You know, they make George look like a hobbit.
I learned about this like when I studied business at school, and I learned about this. They told us like it's a thing people do. They give you a lower chair because it gives them power. Over
yes.
The conversation.
But I think this is a little bit of an extreme.
It's a comical, you know, it's taking it to another level, yeah.
It makes it look like he's sitting on a chair for a kid, you know, that type of thing. Did you
weirdly
notice...
as well makes me... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
It weirdly as well makes me think of my favorite video game of all time. It's one called Disco Elysium. And you have a meeting where someone does this to you in the game. You're having a meeting with the leader of this union who are like conducting a strike, and you sit in a chair, and it's such a strange game that you have to pass all. It's based on Dungeons and Dragons, so there's dice rolls. You know, You have to pass the dice rolls in this uncomfortable chair he's made you sit in. He's got a big luxurious chair. You're sitting in this tiny stool, and if you don't pass the dice rolls, you start slipping off. You slip further down,
And
you can die. You can die in the chair if you don't succeed the dice rolls, because it's such an uncomfortable chair, it kills you.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Now, did you notice what's in front of George as he's sitting down?
The weird skull thing.
That's right. I've never noticed that before. It looks like a keychain type of thing.
But also impractical one.
Yeah, completely. It's humongous. I mean, again, there's also these strange tools that are next to it. I think that these are probably like exotic things that Potter has gotten, you know, from around the world, and is using them in order to try and show once again, you know, that how rich he is.
Oh, whoa. You know what? I thought that, but there's another level. I think as well, does he know? I think he does. He knows about George wanting to travel the world and stuff, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
So he shows what he has acquired in his life. Like, look at what I've done.
That's right.
You haven't done that.
That's where I was going with that. Yes. No, very good. Very good. And then George says, well, I, and then, you know, it's very strange because, you know, George feels very out of place. He's trying to make himself comfortable here, but he's completely, you know, clueless as to what's going on. And he basically says, yeah. I suppose I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly did you want to see me about? So this tells us a lot. I mean, it says that Potter summoned for George, but yeah. He didn't tell him what he wants him for, and George still came. You know, you think
he's a nice guy. He'll turn up no matter what, you know.
Yeah, but if he's being invited by, you know, Potter, so the question is, why am I being invited by Potter? What is Potter what? You know. So it shows a lot of the innocence of George here. Which is great.
Oh, that's why we love him, you know.
Yes.
Because he is innocent. And what I like is he's trying to fit in here. Like, yeah, we're contemporaries, you know, we both run these businesses. He's trying his best and it's not working, is it? He's not a man like Potter.
Correct. And he never can be a man like Potter. That's part of it all.
No.
Yeah. And that's actually how this minute ends. You know, there's, you know, as they say, every minute is still a minute, but there's, I guess, less going on here because we only have these two scenes here. And, you know, we have a lot of some interesting things to talk about, but in general, you know, that's the way that this hump day minute goes. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, that is everything.
Okay. So every Wednesday we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday. And the concept behind this is that, you know, in the 77 years since this movie was made, so there have been many venues, movies, TV shows, books, music, that have copied the idea, the general idea of It's a Wonderful Life, and showing what would happen to characters if either they didn't exist or something changed in their life. Okay, and so one of the things that I came across fits perfectly with you, and I decided to go with comics. So I actually found three Batman comics that have stories that are sort of what-if stories about Batman.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. Okay,
okay. So the first one that I got, I'm just going to briefly talk about all three. The first one I found was a story called The Last Rites. Have you ever heard of that one?
Okay, yeah. I have indeed. I haven't read it, but I've heard it.
Okay, it was written by Grant Morrison. And basically the idea here is that Bruce Wayne... See, that's what happens.
I would have loved to have seen Bruce Willis play him.
That's right. That's what happens when you do two diehard movies and are in preparation for a third. Yes. Hey. So Bruce Wayne is given false memories of a life in which his parents weren't killed. In this fake world, so Jim Gordon and Dick Grayson are both dead, and Bruce is a doctor. Who is basically, you know, coddled by his mother and completely disappointed by his father as to what it is. And then he ends up falling for a patient who turns out to be Selina Kyle.
Hey.
And then she distracts him while she robs, you know, while the surgery is taking place. So, again, I think it's a great idea to constantly change, you know, like what would happen in a Batman history type of thing. So that's
the best thing about comics to me is that's the one problem that people criticize in, you know, comic book movies for being different tones these days. You know, like some people don't like, you know, the way Thor has been a comedy thing. But it's like, to me, well, the whole point of comics is you can have all different interpretations of the same thing. Like there's a million Batmen. You know,
mm-hmm.
and they're all different tones. Some of them are silly, some of them are serious, some of them are this and that. And that's what's amazing. You can do these stories that aren't even connected.
That's right. You know, you have the standalone ones also, and yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think they should be making movies out of stuff like that as well. Just make a Batman movie that's a side, and that would never happen though, because they want to connect everything.
Right. But
wouldn't that be cool if someone just said, "Oh yeah, we've made a new Batman movie. It's based on that Elseworlds Batman where it's in Victorian times." But yeah,
well, they have done that. I recall seeing a DC animated Batman story.
There was.
Which takes place in Victorian era.
There was an animated one, yes. They can get away with it with the animated one, because right. That's an extension of the comic, really. Yeah.
Correct. Okay, so that was the first Batman. The second one is one called The Sacrifice. Have you ever heard of that one?
Not sure.
Okay, so a character named the Phantom Stranger shows Batman what it would be like if his parents didn't die. He gets the family that he's always dreamed of, but without becoming Batman. Gotham City has fallen to ruin under the constant gang wars controlled by supervillains, and Commissioner Gordon has become bedridden quadriplegic after being tortured by one of the gangs.
This does sound familiar. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Ra's al Ghul has conquered much of Eastern Europe and has killed hundreds of thousands, and Dick Grayson is on death row for the murder of Tony Zucco.
Yes.
So, again, another Elseworld type of idea of Batman, like what would have happened if his parents didn't die. And then
seems to be an idea they can never let go of. They're always like, well, what if, though, Batman's dad comes back? He wasn't dead. It's like, oh, okay, we've done that.
Right, exactly. And then there's the third one called Batman Gotham Adventures, which is similar to this one. It was written by Ed Brubaker. In this comic, it's an even bleaker world, and what they have here is that, you know, Dick Grayson is working for Tony Zucco. Tim Drake is working for the Joker. Harvey Dent is taking payoffs from Zucco while remaining unaware of his own split personality. And the end of the story, basically, Commissioner Gordon is killed by the Joker. But once again, I mean, this whole idea is that Batman's parents weren't killed. So then there's the whole question.
Again?
Yes. So then there's the whole question that, okay, you know, if the Joker didn't kill them, so, and Batman didn't push him into a vat of chemicals, then how did he become the Joker, and why is he here? You know, so it's, again, it's another variance of the entire story.
So, yeah. Fantastic. Great idea. Yeah. And you know what? I sort of jokingly criticized it before, but Uke, if you want to keep doing these stories where the parents don't die, churn them out, make millions of them. It's great.
That's right. Well, it comes down to the fact that you know, as long as you think of new ideas with it, then it's great. If you're just rehashing the same old thing, just because, you know, you take the idea of the parents dying, or parents not dying, and seeing where that goes, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as each time it goes in different directions.
Exactly.
You know,
and, you know, some people don't like it where, yeah, but his parents did die. It's like, well, A, it's fictional. And B, it's, as you say, it's like a what if. And isn't that cool to think about? You don't have to accept it as canon.
That's right. Correct. All right. So, John, you want to once again tell people where they can find John Parker?
Yeah, if you want to listen to my other shows, you can go to thebatminute.com. You can go to hedvig.lgbt, and you can go to miamiminutes.kim. I bought a Korean web address for that one because he's Korean, so, and he's called Kim, so I bought it, baby.
Cool.
They're not really very fancy websites. They're just the episode, which is actually by design. I didn't want to have it all cluttered. It's like, no, you just go on there and there's the episodes. Great. What more do you need?
That's right. It's the way it is. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to my new podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.